All right, how's everybody doing today so far? We good?
Good.
All right, good. We're so glad to have you here today. We are in the third week of this message series and this building campaign titled Raise Them Up. And if you haven't been around for a little while, maybe you're wondering what exactly that means. What are we raising up? That's a great question. We are going to be raising up the walls of a facility and a building of our very own, and we could not be more excited about it. We really do believe that God is moving here in really incredible ways, and we believe that now is the time for us to move into a new home of our own, which you just saw little glimpses of it right there. And so as we have been sharing and as we continue to share all the details of this anticipated new facility, we are also tracking along with the Old Testament story of Nehemiah. God put a vision on the heart of Nehemiah to rebuild the city walls of Jerusalem that were laying in ruins. And so each week we have been learning just a little bit more about the vision that God did put on the heart of Nehemiah to discover just a little bit more about how that influences the vision that he has put on our heart as well. The very first thing that we learned 2 weeks ago from Nehemiah's story is that vision begins as a concern. Whether it is personal or professional, or whether it's spiritual, or whether it's for, you know, your marriage or for your family or for your career or something else, right? Any vision begins when we are no longer satisfied with the status quo, with good enough, with the way things are right now. And so Nehemiah's vision started forming in his heart after he got an update on the condition of the city walls back in his ancestors' homeland in Jerusalem. And that update that he got contained five vision-inducing words. And those five words were these right here: things are not going well. And so 2 weeks ago, I took the opportunity to share with all of you the truth that things are not going well here at Camp St. Croix any longer. Right? It has been an amazing home for 4 years exactly, been such an amazing home. I think the best first home we could have ever asked for, but the truth is, I'm not sure it's so great any longer. Right? The truth is, it's beginning to be too small, it's too inaccessible, it's too crowded, it's too chaotic and uncomfortable and inhospitable for our kids. I could go on and on about the cigars we find and the beer bottles we find after Saturday night weddings, you know, when we show up on Sunday morning. I'm not going to go into all of that. Needless to say, all of this and so much more has prompted us to say, you know what, I think now is the time for us to begin pursuing a new opportunity. And just last week, then, we talked about what is almost guaranteed as soon as we begin to pursue any kind of opportunity that God puts in front of us, right? We can boil it down to one word, and that one word is this: opposition. Okay? As soon as we are about to pursue any kind of God-sized opportunity, I almost guarantee that there will be opposition. I almost guarantee that we will experience what feels like a bunch of dead ends, a whole bunch of discouragement, and a whole bunch of distractions disguised as good opportunities designed to get our attention, right? Opposition, I almost guarantee you, will be there at every single turn, trying to knock us off of our feet, trying to pull us away from whatever it is that we had set out to do. And my hope is that Nehemiah's response to all the opposition that he faced, my hope is that Nehemiah's response to all of those distractions would be our response too. Because time and time again, here's the way Nehemiah responded to the distractions in front of him. Every time he said, I'm doing a great work and I cannot come down. Okay? In the face of opposition at every turn, the progress of the wall, because of Nehemiah's commitment, the progress of the wall continues with great success. And so what I hope that we learned from Nehemiah last week is this: that there is no opportunity without opposition. There is no opportunity without opposition. I think, honestly, the two go hand in hand. We have to recognize as individuals, as families, as Jesus followers, as a church, that any opportunity that's worth pursuing will almost always include opposition that is so worth overcoming. And that was certainly the case for Nehemiah. And if it weren't for his commitment to what it is that God had called him to do, this project could have tanked, probably should have tanked at any number of different moments along the way. But it never did. It never did. In fact, The wall is finished almost in the blink of an eye. Listen to the report of the entire project that Nehemiah records for us in chapter 6. Here's what he writes. So on October 2nd, the wall was finished just 52 days after we had begun. 52 days. That's not even 2 full months. Okay, it takes me nearly 2 months to finally pull out the ladder and climb to the top to replace the light bulb that burnt out in the kitchen a while ago, okay? Nehemiah rebuilds in the same amount of time. Nehemiah rebuilds the walls surrounding an entire city, the same walls that laid in ruins for generations, the same walls that whoever else tried to rebuild them ran out of steam, ran out of interest, and gave up somewhere along the way. And yet in 52 days, in the face of criticism, in the face of discouragement, in the face of distraction, in the face of intimidation, Nehemiah completes the project. He is quite possibly the greatest general contractor in the history of human existence. If it weren't for the small little fact that he lived over like 2,500 years ago, I would hire him right now to be our general contractor. No interview necessary. I won't even wait for his bid, okay? I would just say, you're hired. It's a mind-boggling feat. 52 days. And if you're anything like me, you're asking yourself the question, how in the world did that happen? I mean, how did he actually pull this off? Lucky for us, Nehemiah lets us in on his secret. In fact, chapter 3 details the whole thing. I think it's maybe the most inspiring chapter of the whole book, maybe one of the most compelling in the entire Bible. You can see for yourself in a moment, okay? The vision on Nehemiah's heart, it would not have been possible without what happened in chapter 3. It is the X factor. It is the make it or break it component to the success of Nehemiah and to the success of any God-sized vision that you or I might have. Chapter 3 details the whole thing. Do you want to know what it is? Okay, well, I want to show you. Okay, so we're going to turn to chapter 3, and you got to, as I read this, you got to pay very, very close attention, because I do not want you to miss the one thing that contributed most to the success of this project. So here's chapter 3, starting in verse 1. Then Eliashib the high priest and the other priests started to rebuild at the sheep gate, and they dedicated it and set up its doors, building the wall as far as the Tower of the Hundred, which they dedicated, and the Tower of Hananel. And people from the town of Jericho worked next to them, and beyond them was Zakur, son of Imri. Did you catch it? Not yet? Okay, I'll keep reading. Here's verse 3. The fish gate was built by the sons of Hassanah. They laid the beams, set up its doors, and installed its bolts and bars. Meremoth, son of Uriah, and grandson of Hakaz repaired the next section of the wall. Beside him were Meshulam, son of Berechiah, and grandson of Meshezabel, and then Zadok, son of Bana. You're still not seeing it, are you? I'm going to keep reading. Some of you are maybe onto this. Okay, here's the next verse. The old city gate was repaired by Joiada, son of Paseah, and Meshulam, son of Besodiah. Next to them were Melatiah from Gibeon, Jadon from Meronoth, people from Gibeon, and people from Mitzpah, the headquarters of the governor of the province west of the Euphrates River. Here's my favorite. Skip down to verse 14. Nehemiah writes this. The dung gate was repaired by Malkijah, son of Rechab, the leader of the Beth Hekarim district. Now, I don't know what Malkijah did to be assigned to the dung gate. I kind of feel bad for the dude, but you got to hand it to him. Dude's doing his part. And friends, that's kind of the point. That's kind of the point. Chapter 3 goes on like this for 32 verses. Sheep gate, fish gate, old city gate, valley gate, fountain gate, horse gate, and every other section of the wall, and a bunch of more names that I don't really know how to pronounce. I'll be honest with you, it's actually a pretty dry section of reading. And so the question is, why is it there? Why is it included? in the story of Nehemiah? Why is it included in the Bible? Why is there an entire chapter filled with hard-to-pronounce names of people and places from 444 BC? It's a very good question, and there's a very good reason for it. This chapter, I think, is included in order to show us something in particular. I think it's included in order to show us that big visions and big dreams become a reality when they are fueled by the power of everybody. The power of everybody, it is the make it or break it component. It is the secret sauce of Nehemiah's. It is the secret sauce to any God-sized vision. Lone Rangers, they accomplish very, very little. Okay, what's the saying that people always refer to? If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go further, go together. Friends, I think this strange little chapter is included in the Bible to help us see how far we can go together. I think it's included maybe to warn us of a dangerous but all too common little formula that plays and sinks and destroys far too many visions today. And that little formula is this. Vision minus pipe dream. That's the truth. I think that this chapter helps us to see. A vision minus the people is nothing more than just a pipe dream. Okay? Big visions must be divided into small chunks and delegated to many people. Otherwise, big visions die slow, silent, painful deaths. And Nehemiah understood this very well. He knew what was going to be required, and so he got everybody to find their place on the wall. Some believe he even came up with a team cheer. You want to know it? Some believe that he had the people cheering. It was all for one and one for wall. Sorry, couldn't resist, okay? That's a joke, but all jokes aside, Mid-Current, I'm praying that our new home, I'm praying that our next step, I'm praying hard that it wouldn't pan out to be a pipe dream. And in order for that not to be the case, everybody has to find their place on the wall. Okay? Raising up the physical walls of our new home is a big, big vision. And it's got to be split up into small chunks for all of us to do our part. Because here's the reality. Here's the cold, hard facts. Here's the cold, hard figures and dollars for this big vision that we are after. Okay? The build-out of our new home is looking to be slightly more than $500,000. That's going to be the one-time upfront expense to build the walls, to hang the lights, to lay the floors, and so on, okay? That's the bad news, okay? The good news that I'm actually crazy excited to share with you, the good news is that because of some generous people here at Mid-Current who have kind of been in on the ground level of all of this, the good news is that because of their generosity, we have already had pledged to us $143,000 toward that $500,000. Nearly $100,000 of it is going to be cash in our hand day one to begin this project. Okay, the ball is rolling, the momentum is rising, but the truth is $400,000+, it's still a pretty big number too that we need to break into smaller chunks for all of us to be responsible for. And here's the part that's going to stretch our faith, I think, in a way that could pay big spiritual dividends, okay? Those commitments for each of us to make toward the one-time build-out of these new walls, these commitments need to be over and above and on top of our regular giving to Mid-Current. We can't swap or switch or replace or substitute our regular giving to the work of the church for the current campaign that we are in, right? Erica and I, for example, we've never given anything less than 10% of our income back to whatever church that we call home, and we've never given less than 10% of what we make back to Midcurrent. It is the very first check that we write at the beginning of every single month, and that's not going to change in the midst of this campaign. So what we're doing is we're digging into new places in our life, and we're trying to come up with new creative ideas for where we can find more money to invest in more of God's kingdom work here. And so everything that we give to raise up the walls of this new home of ours is going to be on top of our regular commitment to Midcurrent. Otherwise, right, if this isn't the approach that we take, otherwise, here's what's going to happen. Midcurrent is going to have a big, new, beautiful place to call home. And we'll have no staff, no supplies, no resources, no anything to do any kind of ministry in that big new building that we get to call home. Right? So maintaining a full operating budget is going to be key. And it's going to be actually all the more essential going forward because our rent in this new building for the months and the years after the walls are built, our rent is going to be increasing significantly. Currently, we rent this building right now for 6 hours a week, just about. And the rent that we pay for those 6 hours amounts to about 9% of our annual budget. Rent on day one, you ready for this? Rent on day one in our new facility is going to be about 60% of our current annual budget. And experts recommend that that figure would be a lot closer to 30%. And so our regular giving to Midcurrent outside of this campaign, it matters. It really matters. And in the weeks and in the months to come, we're going to talk some more specifics about that. We're going to talk about how we believe that we can close the gap, which we actually do believe is so much more doable than you might think. And we look forward to talking about all of that. But what's most important today, okay? All of that is going to be important tomorrow, but what's most important today is setting that $500,000 target on the wall and each one of us beginning to take aim, okay? And so that's what we've created a little pledge card for you to use as your way to take aim. We've created a pledge card that's going to help you take aim toward this $500,000 target that we are putting on the wall. And so what's going to happen today is you're going to go home with a folder full of all the campaign material, right? If you're watching online with us or you're just tuning in at some other point during the week, that entire folder is online digitally. You can find it at midcurrentchurch.org/raise-em-up. Okay, all the same material. Quite honestly, a whole lot more is included there. But one way or another, today you are going to have access to a folder full of all the campaign material. And included in that material, you're going to see a pledge card. And it represents your small chunk of our big vision. It's going to represent specifically your commitment to our one-time upfront $500,000 target on the wall, the majority of which is going to be due as soon as construction begins in a few months. And our goal is to fully fund this project without incurring any debt. And so what that means is that we are praying hard. We are praying hard to see as many of you, make commitments to us up front right now to raise the walls, to foot the bill, to avoid debt, keeping Midcurrent positioned to do more ministry with more of every dollar that we receive. Okay, but we also recognize that for some of you, you might be able to give best or maybe able to give to a fuller capacity if you were to spread it out over 3 years. And so the pledge card that you're going to see in that folder, the pledge card that you're going to see online, it leaves a space for that as well, to partner with us for the 3 years of this campaign, right? So you can either give now, you can spread your commitment out over 3 years, or you can do both. We'll gladly send you home with one or two or three or four pledge cards if that's what you would like. But one way or another, we need to embrace some Nehemiah-like urgency and Nehemiah-like dedication to raise them up. Now, I want to stop here for a moment because I'm going to guess that at this point I can read your mind. Like, you're thinking, like, that's all overwhelming, right? You're thinking, like, that's a lot of money to raise. That's not a lot of time to raise it. That feels scary. This isn't going to be easy. If I had to guess, I'm thinking that maybe that's how you're responding to some of this. And if that's what you're saying to yourself, if that's what you're thinking to yourself today, that's a lot of money, that's not a lot of time, this is overwhelming, here's what I would say to you. You're exactly right. It is a little scary. It is a lot of money, and it's not a lot of time. But I believe that it is entirely possible. I believe that this vision can be and will be a reality for us as long as it is fueled by the power of everybody. And when I say everybody, I mean everybody. And to help you understand exactly what it is that I'm getting at when I say that, let me introduce you to my friend Jenny. Take a look.
In 2015, my family and I started going to Cedarbrook Church in Menominee. Prior to attending that church, God was not a part of our daily lives, and a lot of the relationships in my life were stale. I remember wishing my husband liked church and praying for one Christian friend to come along. But attending a church we were excited about completely changed everything. Our marriage was strengthened, my kids learned about Jesus, what we did on the weekends changed, and what we started praying together as a family. In many ways, you could say that our lives did a 180. There are many people at Cedarbrook who have contributed to my family's transformation, but two that I will always have in mind that stand out in particular are Sten and Erica Carlson. Sten came home from work, and together they told me that they were feeling called to plant a church. They weren't sure what it would look like or how it was going to come to fruition, but they both knew that it was something that they were supposed to do. Fast forward a few years, and it has been so much fun to watch Midcurrent grow. I've gotten to attend many Midcurrent services and events, and have always felt connected with the people who go there. Having had my own life be so impacted by church has made me wonder how I could help Midcurrent grow even more, and I've often asked my husband, what if there are more families out there that need what we've found in our church? What if there are more families in Hudson area who need the same thing in their lives? Marriages could be saved. Women could realize their worth. Parents could connect and kids could grow closer to Jesus. One morning, not that long ago, I was about to leave to have coffee with Erica when I sensed that God was asking us to give to Midcurrent. I knew he was asking us to give financially, but the amount that he had asked for, I was like, God, I don't have that amount right now. But it was very clear that it was supposed to actually be split up into a monthly tithing thing. And I thought, okay, that I can do. I talked to my husband about it and we prayed over the money. When I arrived at her house that day, I told Erica how I'd felt like we needed to give to Midcurrent and that we hoped and prayed that the money would be able to help reach other families like ours. I handed her an envelope filled with checks written out to Midcurrent in the amount of $500. I told her she could cash one every month. Altogether, there were 10 checks. I'll never forget the look on Erica's face and the look she had in her eyes when I handed them to her. Little did I know that my family had been the first to contribute to the Midcurrent building campaign that I wasn't even aware of. God had prepared someone who didn't even attend Midcurrent to give an amount that wasn't yet in our account for a cause that wasn't even public. I had the chills because we had literally just asked ourselves earlier that week, how can we help Midcurrent grow? Getting closer to God through a grace-filled church like mine has completely changed my life, and I'm so thankful that God has made me a partner in helping reach more families just like mine for Midcurrent. I'm beyond excited for the walls of that new space to be built, and I can hardly wait for God to raise them up.
Friends, if people who don't even go to Midcurrent and didn't even know about our campaign are compelled to give $500,000 or $5,000 of money that they don't even have toward our building campaign, if people that don't go here and don't know what's happening here are compelled to give in a way sensing that God is at work here, I can't help but think what is possible for you and for me. I can't help but think what is possible for those of us that do go here, those of us who do call this place home, those of us who have seen and experienced God's movement here, those of us who have been impacted by God's work in our lives in the last 4 years. What more could be possible? Friends, I really do believe with everything inside of me that God is doing a great work among us here. And I don't want us to come down, back down, step down, or turn around now. All that's to come, right? All the unknown, right? All that's to come in terms of the investment and the finances, $500,000, it might feel like a whole lot of opposition to us, might feel like a whole lot of opposition to you right now, but I don't think that there is any opportunity worth pursuing without it. And I don't think that there is any opportunity that really becomes a reality without the power of everybody. And so here's my question to you today, Midcurrent. Would you be a part of the everybody? Would you ask God to help you find your place on these walls that we are building together? I actually want to close today by giving you a few moments to ask some of those very questions. And so what I'm going to do right now is I'm actually going to invite Brian and Anna to come back up here on stage with me. And what I want for you to do is I just want to press pause for a second here and take a few moments for us just to call a time out. And so what I want for you to do as they take their places, I want you to close your eyes for a second. I want you to sit back in your chair or sit up in your chair or sit in any way that you think it might be best to put yourself in a position to talk to God, to put yourself in a position to hear from God. And on the screen, there's going to come a few questions that I'm going to read for you as well, but I want to just create a moment here for you to ask God some questions about what part you might play as we continue to move forward. And so I want you to take a moment now to get into that place, to get into that posture, to hear more from God. And as Brian plays and as Brian, Anna, and sing, I just want to guide you in a short, in a very simple conversation with God. I want these to be moments right here and right now. Maybe they'll be the only moments that you take this week or this month. I'm not really sure, but I want these to be a few moments right here and right now where you would open your heart to God to see how it is and where it is that he might be leading you. And so as we begin, here is the first question that I'd love to have you be asking. Here's the first question that I would love for you to be praying to God here this morning. Ask yourself, God, is there any part of my heart that isn't completely surrendered to you? Maybe you even get more specific and you ask this, God, is there any part of my financial life that needs to be sacrificed, that needs to be given up, that needs to be redirected or recommitted to you and to what you want to accomplish in the world? Take a moment to ask God to help you examine your own heart.
You can see a way out, and it makes no sense. You say that's what faith is for. When I see a flood, you see a promise. When When I see a grave, you see a door. When I'm at my end, you see where the future starts.
Reality is, any step that you might take, any step that we might take, it's going to require us to be bold, to take risks, to step out in faith. And so maybe take a moment right now to ask God this, to pray this prayer to God. God, would you give me the eyes to see where it is that you show up in the midst of those steps of faith? Ask God to help you become more aware of where he already is or where he is going to show up in your life as you pursue more of him and more of the ways that he is at work in the world. Ask God to give you eyes to see him and his faithfulness to you.
I don't know how you make a way, but I know you will. I don't know how you make a way, but I know you will. You've been good on every promise, Eden desire, every dead end, and out of that grave. I don't know how you make a way, but I know you will.
Finally, take a moment to consider where it is that God is leading and where it is that we are going together as a church. Take a moment to consider what's ahead of us. And ask God, God, what part are you asking me? What part of the wall are you asking me to build today? Ask God, what part would you have me play in your work here at MidCurrent?
Don't know how you make a way, but I know you will. Don't know how you make a way, but I know you will. You've been good on every promise, Eden desire, every dead end, and out of that grave. Don't know how you make a way, but I know you will.
Let me close in prayer for all of us here today. God, we give you thanks for the ways that you are working in the world around us, God, in ways that we might not even know about, that we might not even see. But God, we give you thanks too for the ways that we do see, for the things that we do know about happening in our own community, in our own lives, in our own families, in our own marriages. God, we give you so much thanks for what has happened here at MidCurrent in the last 4 years. God, we thank you for leading the way for us at each and every step in the process. God, and we could not be more excited about where it is that we feel like you're leading us next. God, a new home, a new building, a new facility, it's not the end, it's not the finish line. In many ways, it's just the beginning of it all. It's the starting line for us, God, to do more of what you would have us do, to reach more people in the St. Croix Valley with the grace and with the good news of Jesus. And God, honestly, it's not just the walls of a new facility that we're hoping would be built up in the coming months, in the coming years. God, we ask you that it's our faith in you that would be built up. As we risk and as we sacrifice and as we step out boldly and put ourselves in a position to see how good and to see how faithful you really are to us. So God, we pray that you would be our guide as we move forward. God, we pray that you would be very clear to us about the part that we are supposed to play, God, on the wall. God, we commit everything that takes place from here on out to you. God, we commit ourselves to you. We commit our work to you. We commit a new facility to you because we believe that you are asking us to create more space. God, we believe that you are asking us to create more opportunities for real everyday people. And for you, a very real God who's moving and active in the world, God, we believe that you're asking us to create more spaces for you to meet. And so that's what we're setting out to do, God. And we commit all of ourselves to you. And we pray this in your name. Amen. Hey, I am really so glad that you are here today, that you are tuning in online. Here's how this is going to work today. On your way out, there is going to be a white folder for you that we want to send home with your family. And we want you to take the next 2 weeks, because we realize that a handful of you next week are going to be at a women's retreat that we are super excited about. And so we would be so honored to have you take that folder home. Inside, you'll find that pledge card. And in the next 2 weeks, we would love to have you pray. We would love to have you discuss with your family, discuss with your spouse, if that's you, how it is that you would maybe contribute. We would love to have you pray and discuss what part you might play on the wall. And in the next 2 weeks, either bring that back to church and drop it in the collection box on Sunday, or send it in the mail to the address that you will see on that card. We believe that God is moving here. We believe that God wants to continue to raise up a current and a next generation of Jesus followers, and we want to raise up the walls to do all of that and so much more. The last thing I'll say is this. Next week, we are going to have a handful of people gone at a women's retreat that we are very excited about, but I'm crazy excited about what's going to be happening here at Camp St. Croix next week. I am actually going to be back behind the guitar, back behind this microphone, and joining me is going to be my old lead pastor, Remy Dietrich, from my former church. He's going to be here. I'm going to have a chance to interview him about the church planting journey that he went on. I'm going to have a chance to interview him about their move from space to space to space to the building that they now call home. And he's going to share some incredible insight about the process, about where he saw and experienced God in the midst of all of it. And so I'm crazy excited to be here next Sunday. If you're within earshot of Mid-Current, we would love to have you come and be with us and fill up this room as we continue one final week of celebration about what we believe God is going to be doing in the midst of this new project of ours. That is all I have left for you. Make sure to grab another cup of coffee, a donut, if there is any left. Say hello to someone sitting next to you. Meet someone new. Shake a hand. And we hope to see you again. Bless you.